Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Second hour, Big Sunday. We've got some NFL football coming up today. And, of course, the Kansas City Royals go for 5 in a row. Big Baby Brad Keller. At J.R. Josh Vernier at noon with the pregame show, and looking forward to the NFL today. It's good to have football back. It's good to be back. It's good to see Grant. It's been a minute. Anyway, I'm glad to be back and talking football, and joining us now by the fabulous Royals insider, Josh Vernier. Josh, good morning.
It's nice to have you back.
Thanks, buddy.
It's nice to hear you. And isn't this just such a crazy time? NBA playoffs, baseball's playoffs, the start of football. You got the Stanley Cup. It's overwhelming.
Watching playoffs last night. Of course, NASCAR's in the playoffs. I enjoy watching that. So I had that on. Then the Kansas game. It feels right, Vern. It feels. And Oktoberfest beer's out now.
It feels like football. I'll give you that. It feels like football. It feels like playoff baseball. It's just weird that there's all this other sports on top of it. I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm just glad it's back.
And by the way, the Royals are winning. The Royals went through some hard times earlier. Listen, I told Grant earlier, all these losses, like that 5-2 loss in St. Louis, they start that up. What they did back today, 4.5 back at this point, but they would be a lot closer. Of course, a couple of those games went their way.
I actually stopped looking, to be quite honest with you. During that 7-game losing streak, once they traded Trevor Rosenthal, I stopped paying attention to the wild card race.
Sure.
I haven't thought of going back, but
sure.
that doesn't diminish what they've done of late. It certainly does not diminish what Chris Bubich and Brady Singer and Brad Keller have shown us this season, because those are the guys that, as Rex Hudler would say, those are the guys that are driving the bus to the next championship. Now, of course, they got to have a nice defense and bullpen and offense. That's any championship team. But the starting pitching in this organization, that's what's going to lead you to the next championship. There is no such thing as a Patrick Mahomes when it comes to baseball. One player can't give you a chance every single day like he does. I mean, for the next decade, every Sunday, the Chiefs have a chance to win because of 15. The closest thing that baseball has to that is a dominant rotation, and that's what the Royals are hoping to build here, because that means every time you drive to Kauffman Stadium, or a large majority of the times you drive to Kauffman Stadium, your team has a very good chance to win because you have the better starting pitcher.
Ned Yost used to talk about the importance of having two or three guys hot in the lineup. Well, the Royals have Merrifield. They've got Mondesi. I mean, unfortunately, they lost Perez. I mean, Perez was on. I mean, he came back with a vengeance this year.
He's amazing.
You have Sal Perez, and then you have Mikey Franco. That's leading in RBIs after 7 innings. They've got the talent. Now, right now, you're starting to see them together. It's too bad Soler's not with this lineup. But wanted to ask you about Mondy. Obviously, I'm a huge Mondy guy. And him struggling early, I knew it had to be mental because of the game, the approach. You've only talked about failures in the game of baseball, and we saw it a lot. I mean, looking around Major League Baseball, a lot of stars were struggling, man. What people look at the microscope here, but across the league, there were certain stars struggling. But Matheny gave him a day off, and he was batting at the bottom of the lineup. He's been batting second, and what he's doing is historic with the home runs and RBI. What do you think? Was it just finally coming together with the hitting coach? Was it moving? Was it Matheny kind of working things out, giving him a day off? What was it?
I don't know if we can – I don't think it's right for us to ask as if what happened in August will never happen again.
Sure.
it might happen again next year. And if it happens in April, what does that do to the rest of his season? What I saw, of course, some of it was mentality and beating himself up and trying too hard and feeling as if he let his teammates down. He's to me a lot like Mike Moustakas, a lot like Yordano Ventura. When they weren't producing, boy, they just felt so guilty to their teammates that they pressed, and it just continued to turn into a downward spiral, and they would just get inside their own head, and it was darn near impossible for those guys to get out. But when they did, we all remember how great Yordano Ventura was. We all remember what Mike Moustakas turned into, a two-time All-Star and a world champion. There's still plenty of time for Adalberto Mondesi to turn into a perennial All-Star. He's just 25 years of age, but I was also seeing some, just fundamental flaws. And look, I'm nothing when it comes to playing the game. I didn't do anything, so I'm not going to break down his swing all that much, but it didn't look as fluid as it does right now. His head didn't appear to be as locked in on the ball as it is right now. It didn't appear that he trusted his hands as much as he does right now. He's just less jumpy at the plate, seems to be cool and calm and collected. My question is how much of this ease at the plate correlates with the lack of pressure, lack of playoff push, lack of importance that these games have right now? It's great to see this from Mondesi, but going into spring training next year, I'm going to be grateful that he's on the team because he's one of the best defenders and one of the best base stealers in baseball. But I'm still going to view him as an eight hitter. I'm no longer going to assume he's going to be a run producer for this team until he can do it for a consistent 2-3 months. Of course, there's going to be a tough stretch in there. But I'm talking about solid plate appearances for half a season. I think that's only fair in this game of sample size and 162 game seasons. It's so much fun to watch him. Trust me, selfishly, I want him to work out because I'll have a great view of one of the great careers that has ever come through Kansas City. I mean, he's got that kind of talent, Bink. You know it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's right there with Beltran as far as the best all-around players that have come through this city in the last 30 years.
I haven't seen that talent in the longest time. It just comes natural to him. When you have guys like Witt that work so hard at the game, it comes natural.
Right.
He's mid-20s now. I get it. I considered him 3 years ago was talking about the three young guns in the city, Mahomes, Keller, and Mondesi. I consider them the future. And this is, a couple years ago going forward. Sure. But the young guns in the city to get behind and get excited about. And Mondi was that guy. And he's so interesting to me, Vern, because – I remember going back and even Ned talking about it, that Mondi gets hurt a lot, and he used to get hurt a lot. But then Ned was talking about that 1 year, his 18, when he really, really started coming around because he was going to the training table every day. It's something he didn't do.
Yeah.
And I always thought if he watched Escobar, you watch the work ethic of a guy that's a consummate starter every day in Major League Baseball. Didn't matter where you put him, outfield, he didn't complain. Didn't complain when he finally had the sit. Yes, there was times that he didn't do things. But it seemed like Escobar was a good influence for him. He kind of learned the game and everything in the training table. But Mondi seems to me a guy that guys never gave up on. When Hunter talked about him, Gordon, they all talked about him when he's going through his troubles. But every single one of them had his back because they knew the talent. It was about bringing it out. It's so nice to see.
Yeah, and that's what always gave me confidence to remain in the young man's corner. Because, like I mentioned, I've been around baseball a long time, but I'm not going to pretend to know as much as GMs or managers or players, most specifically. So when I hear guys like Whit Merrifield and you mentioned Hunter Dozier, when I hear them just so casually brush away any concerns about the ability of Mondesi during the slump, them rave about his talents and how great he's going to be when it ultimately clicks. That's enough backing. That's enough of a because they have no reason to do it. I mean, we all know what cliched answers sound like. There's a way to compliment your teammate without going out of your way and putting your foot in your mouth. Merrifield, Dozier, Matheny, Yost, I mean, all of them. Nobody hesitates to talk about the greatness as far as the talent that Adalberto Mondesi possesses. So, look, they go out of their way to talk about it, so I have no problem defending it when it's not necessarily apparent to the average baseball fan. And to me, it's maybe not even the average baseball fan, because I got to imagine, Bink, that the average baseball fan sees him defensively and says, okay, that's one of the best defensive shortstops in baseball. That's one of the best base stealers in baseball. And knowing a five-tool player, three of the five tools, you know, base stealing, the glove, and the arm, the guy's in the top 1% in all of Major League Baseball, and he was doing that in August when he wasn't hitting. That's three of the five tools. That works on a championship team 100% of the time. The bat is normally a bonus, and man, his bat is certainly going to be a bonus.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what it's hard to imagine the guy, you know, that can hit a 458-foot home run, which he's done, and lead the American League in five stolen bases. Those two things just don't correlate together. That just,
I mean, it does for Mike Trout and Ronald Acuna and Fernando Tatis, like
big
the
names.
Best players on the planet. Yeah, right.
And
Carlos Beltran, right?
Yeah, talked to Hunter Dozier a couple weeks ago when I was filling in with Cody and Gold, and one thing I had asked him about is playing without fans and the advantages and disadvantages for all these rookies coming up. You know, there's no adrenaline, so it's less pressure because you don't have, you know, the fan. But when Singer and Bubich and these guys are making their debuts, but I got to thinking on the way home the opposite way. I got to thinking about guys like Mondesi when he's going through struggles. The good news was, well, he can stay off social media for one thing, but he didn't hear boos. And I think that was good, to be honest with you. I think when you're going through your struggles, the fact that you weren't at your stand, because I think these fans would have booed. I really do. But you didn't hear that, which I think was huge for him.
Yeah, I can't argue that. Actually, what was happening in my mind when you were saying that, because you are right. I mean, Adalberto Mondesi, like I mentioned, like a Mike Moustakas, like a Yordano Ventura, he's an emotional guy. That would affect me. If I could hear all the people that are booing me when I'm on the radio, it would just tear me apart. Fortunately, I don't have to hear that. Mondesi would. You're correct. Other than him, though, thinking about these rookies, I don't know how many of these rookies would have been booed this season. As you know, Singer, Bubich, Zuber, these guys have pitched fairly well. I actually think that those guys are at a disservice because they don't have fans, because their progression, their maturity has gone so quickly, and they've handled it all so very well. I would love to see how Brady Singer, how Chris Bubich handle a hostile environment, a Friday night in New York against the Yankees, or in Boston against the Red Sox. I'd love, because I think they could handle it. I'm pretty sure they could, but that's something that we're going to have to wait until next year to truly learn. I feel like they'll do just fine in those circumstances, but we don't know yet.
Kelvin Gutierrez in the lineup today at third base, a guy that was, he's brought in with that Herrera trade a few years ago. Nick Heath, get to see him in the lineup again today. I'll leave you with this, Vern. The Royals so far this season, we all had expectations. My expectation was, hey, this is if they would have played, if COVID and they would have started in March and all that, it was about development. You know, seeing Singer come up and Bubich and Nick Heath and some of these guys, it was about developing for 2021 and 2022. I never really sat here and go, because I'm kind of like you, the playoffs is one thing, that's fine. They added a playoff team, that's great. But I want to see the fundamental development from the Royals. Can you safely say we've seen that at this point of the season?
With the pitching, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, Singer's a winner and Bubich is a winner. And that's what we're trying to create, right? That's what any franchise is trying to create. So it's nice to see that in whatever role they play, whether it's the top of the rotation, the bottom of the rotation, or out of the bullpen, Singer and Bubich, the toughness, grit, tenacity, I think that they've shown this season proves that they'll be on that stage the next time a trophy is handed over to Royals ownership.
Josh Vernier coming up in about 47 minutes from right now with Big Baby on the mound getting you ready for the Royals. Josh, always a good talking to you. It was great talking to you, Virtual Royals. I don't know if you know this or not, but you were Virtual Baseball Insider of the Year.
Really?
Yeah, Kramer and I actually voted on the award because no one else really cared. We were the broadcasters of the year. We gave you the virtual insider. But you know what? There was no voting, so we did it ourselves, but you still won. You're still a winner.
Okay, so Kramer voted for me is what you're saying.
Yeah, me and Kramer did. Yeah.
Oh, you did too?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it.
Virtual
Thanks,
insider of the year, yeah.
Well, cheers.
Yeah, thank you, Vern. Hey, we'll be listening to you, buddy. Keep it up.
All right, chug a beer for me.
Oh, you know what? I haven't done that in a while. I used to do that every game.
Well, now you can't do it. If they're winning and you're not doing
don't do it
until they lose.
No, I'm not going to chug. I was chugging. Eventually, I was just chugging during wins, and then I was like, okay, because they were losing a bunch at the beginning, and I was
you
like.
You had all these beers, and you got a drink.
On to Cincinnati, you know. I was ready. Let's just go. All right, we'll be listening to you, Vern. Take
it
easy.
All right.
There you go. Josh Vern, your Royals insider right there talking about the development and the resurgence of Adalberto Mondesi. Coming up next, back to the Kansas City Chiefs, specifically the defense. Craig Stout, defensive film guru, arrowheadpride.com next.
Big Sunday.
Welcome back to Big Sunday. Jay Binkley, Grant Nicholson, producing, talking Chiefs, talking Kansas City Royals, talking college football that went down yesterday. Time to talk about Chiefs and specifically that Chiefs defense. It's one of the best in the business. Part of that, as I mentioned with Matt Lane, part of that Arrowhead Pride draft guide, which is fantastic. His Twitter handle is at Barley Hop because, well, he likes beer. And the Kansas City Chiefs. His name is Craig Stout. You guys know him well from different times. And it's been a minute, Craig.
Hey, how's it going, Bink?
It's good to have you back, brother. It feels like football now that you're on the air with me.
Good to be back. Mm. Yes, absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
You and Matt Lane, I feel like things are back, like the world's back on axis. You know, it's back on tilt. We're talking football. Of course, the Chargers, the Chiefs' next opponent play in Cincinnati later today at 3, and the Chiefs chilling out this weekend after a win in the clubhouse. All right, evolution of the defense. We saw a completely different defense from 18 to 19 with Steve Spagnuolo. Few extra pieces added to the equation this year, including the rookie Legarius Sneed, who had to step up in a big way. Overall impressions about how they stopped Deshaun Watson?
I thought it was pretty good. It was understandably sloppy from a tackling aspect. You know, Steve Spagnuolo said that, you know, going into the week that they didn't get a whole bunch of reps tackling, so it made sense that they were a little sloppy in that regard. But yeah, I was really impressed by the rookies, Mike Dana, Tershawn Wharton, and especially Legarius Sneed. Held up well in week one action, especially with not having any preseason reps. That was great to see the coaching staff get them already.
Yeah, you talked about Dana, the rookie from Michigan that a lot of people were surprised they went with in Sneed. And you talked about Turk Wharton. Here's a Division II guy that's going to be counted upon, you know, with some of the injuries on the D-line. I mean, these are guys that are going to be household names. Dana had 3 tackles in the previous game. I think people will get to know the name Turk Wharton. Of course, they know Chris Jones, but they're going to be counting on some of these rookies. And in Turk's case, being an undrafted free agent, that's huge for Brett Veach.
That's huge for Brett Veach. That's a credit to the coaching staff and then Brendan Daly and Steve Spagnuolo for getting an undrafted D2 kid that had to put on a lot of weight. I think people forget that he played around 250 as a defensive end there in college. And then as the kind of process went this offseason, he put on a lot of weight. And so the Chiefs saw that they had something here with this defensive tackle. I think we were all a little bit surprised a couple weeks ago when James Palmer had said that he might be a lock to make the 53. But as you saw this week, you shouldn't be surprised. He's got an outstanding first step. He looked great. He looked the part. He looked like a guy that should have been drafted and should have made this roster. So kudos to the Chiefs for doing that.
Well, I'll admit, putting on weight is easy, Craig, because I'm very good at that. But putting on good weight is a totally different thing. There's a difference between good weight and bad weight, and unfortunately I'm kind of the other way. But, I mean, he did it, because these guys lose their speed, they lose their agility, lose a lot of things, so good weight's huge.
Yeah, and he definitely did not lose that first step. His very first snap of the game came after Colin Saunders' injury. It was a touchdown run for David Johnson there, but you saw him penetrate, get into the backfield, and completely change the cutback lane for David Johnson there. He continued to do that throughout the course of the day. He was giving a Houston Texans offensive line that, you know, the interior is not great, but it's experienced. He was giving them fits on the interior. So that was really good to see. They're going to need to count on him with Colin Saunders potentially out for a little while here. I know we don't know anything about how long, but I bet they're probably just going to roll with Turk Wharton and three defensive tackles until they get Mike Pennell back in week three.
And that's going to be another addition. You know, you look at this, I would say, I don't know where you stand, Craig, but definitely I think the defensive line is the marquee spot right now on the defense. I don't know, defense, linebackers, and secondary. Wouldn't you say the defensive line at this point is number one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Chiefs they had two guys inactive in Demone Harris and Taco Charlton that I don't know that that will be the case next week with Alex Okafor and everything, but they had two guys there that would probably be on active rosters for other teams. Demone Harris got Super Bowl reps last year, and Taco Charlton has a lot of potential, especially with Brendan Daly and Spagnuolo at the helm. So, yeah, they're really deep when they are, you know, putting guys like that on their inactive list. So, yes, I think that it's a really top-to-bottom good defensive line rotation. And, yeah, like you said, adding Mike Pennell back here in week three is just going to make it even better.
Let's talk about the linebackers a second. Hitchens, a couple years ago, did lead the NFL in tackles. He ends up with seven tackles in the game, just one behind the Honey Badger for the team lead. But he's that Mike linebacker right there in the middle. And I know the Chiefs don't exactly run the 4-3. It's more of a hybrid blend with safeties. But overall, we didn't see Willie Gay step into a deal. I know you and I are looking forward to him. I always thought he'd be the defensive rookie we're talking about, to be honest with you. I thought he might be ahead of the curb when it came to that, although you heard the reports from training camp and, you know, you saw that he's a backup. But I still believe he's going to be a household name in this town at some time. But overall, you're just impressions of, well, Ben Neiman's getting a lot of work at linebacker now as well. Just your impression of the overall aspect of the running, the linebackers, especially the running game.
I wasn't terribly impressed by the linebackers in week one. And again, you know, not being able to tackle, not being able to have those live reps every single week leading up to the season, it's a little bit understandable, but they looked, frankly, like they looked last year. You know, they looked a little bit lost in coverage. Ben Neiman getting beat up the seam there late by Jordan Akins, that's not great. That's a situation that you would hope a guy like Willie Gay Jr. could step in with that speed, athleticism. You know, the ability to cover a tight end up the seam would be helpful in that regard. But, yeah, the run defense wasn't particularly great. They didn't really fill gaps particularly well. They got beat in space. So I'm looking forward to the coaching staff getting Gay up to speed here, because it does appear that Steve Spagnuolo is fine here with getting some rookies on the field. It must be, you know, just making sure that he understands the playbook. They've praised Ben Neiman and his ability to play every spot. I would expect that Neiman's going to continue to get those reps until Willie Gay can kind of get up to speed a little bit more here. Then we'll start seeing him rotate in a little bit. I'm with you, Binks. I want to see the kid out there, because I get flashes of Derek Johnson when I watch him play.
Oh, he's a hitter.
So I really, really want to see a guy like that on the field for the Chiefs defense again.
Where do you prefer, on the strong side? Because it looks like right now the backup Sam, or Will, where he was actually the best coverage linebacker coming out of the draft.
I think the spot that they've kind of got him going here, that base Sam, which, I mean, the Chiefs were barely in their base defense in week one, just a small handful of snaps. It was mostly their nickel and dime defense that they were in. I want him to be in the Damian Wilson spot in the nickel, which is that Buck or Will linebacker position in the nickel there. He's going to draw the harder matchup, tight ends, running backs, you know, coming across there. I think that's the spot for him. I think that's where he has the most impact for this Chiefs defense. And then if they feel comfortable with him rotating in the dime, now, again, that's Ben Neiman's spot. They give Ben Neiman the green dot because he calls front in the dime defense. That's something that Willie Gay would have to do in that situation. But once that kind of rotates in, I'd like to see him in that role too, because he's just that kind of athlete, and he's that kind of coverage linebacker. We need to see that kind of athlete on the field for the Chiefs.
Another guy, Dorian O'Daniel, and there was some talk, is he going to make this roster or not? And, you know, we had just talked about baseball-wise with Mondesi, you know, just late to develop. I remember Dorian O'Daniel, when he came from the powerhouse Clemson, he was actually the highest-graded player on Pro Football Focus in that draft that year from the defense of Clemson. But, man, when you talk about the four tackles and he ended up with the sack, he seems like a guy that they can plug and play in different places and makes an impact.
he's definitely the go-to guy for Steve Spagnuolo and Matt House to be a QB spy. It definitely seems like that's been his role over the last two seasons. We saw it last year against Houston as well. They kind of put him in that dime defense, and they would have him track and follow, you know, Deshaun Watson, not putting too much on his plate there. Just basically line up, make sure he doesn't break contain, and he does an excellent job of that because he, too, is a good athlete. Steve Spagnuolo actually ran a little bit more of a three-down lineman, two-linebacker set, something we did not see much last year with Dorian O'Daniel and Ben Neiman on the field together. That actually was pretty successful, and that's what, you know, Dorian O'Daniel's sack came on. He had a couple of nice plays out there in some space. So if they are going to be, you know, go up against some of these teams that have athletic, mobile quarterbacks or maybe some backfields that have a little bit more dynamic nature in them, not necessarily a quarterback, but, you know, multi-back sets and things like that, Dorian O'Daniel makes a lot of sense because of that speed, because of that change of direction ability. He's a guy that they can put on the field and rely on to kind of eliminate one of those weapons.
Well, they had four sacks, probably could have had eight, to be honest with you. Deshaun Watson mm-hmm. got out of a lot of trouble. Defensively, stopping the run, gave up 118 yards, ended up finishing 26th in the league at stopping the run. Were you confident? Well, you did mention the tackling and everything else, but to me, like, this base defense, he's going to change it up. Like, every week we're going to be talking about something different. I think that's just the makeup of this defense. He's got the talent, the skill to adjust the defense accordingly to who they're playing, quarterback spy or not, with mobile quarterbacks. But do you feel confident that the carryover is going to happen still with this running game against the Chiefs defense like we started to see last year at that Chargers game?
I think that will be the case, yeah. I do think that the Chargers next week are going to be a better test for the Chiefs defense because while Herbert is a mobile quarterback, you know, a guy like that that they could put in, and so is Tyrod Taylor, whoever it is that ends up starting in that game, I do think that there's going to be a little bit more of a traditional running game. Bill O'Brien is a heck of an offensive play caller. He's a guy that can make a big difference in the way that he approaches the game, and he kind of keeps defensive coordinators off balance. I do think that the Chargers are going to present a more traditional rushing attack. And then in week three, they get Mike Pinnell back. And, yes, mm-hmm. that's the Baltimore Ravens. That's going to be Greg Roman and a very diverse attack on the ground there. So I do think we're going to see, you know, multiple different facets of what the Chiefs defense can do against the run. Once we get to around that week four, week five, week six range, when everybody's got a little bit more live reps under their belts and their coaching staff does as well, I think we're going to see what the Chiefs' run defense truly is, but they're definitely going to get a diverse set of looks. And I agree, Vin. I think they're going to line up all kinds of different ways over the next 5 weeks.
Talking to Craig Stout at Barley Hop on Twitter, part of the great crew over at ArrowheadPride.com. And last but not least, Craig, the secondary. Watson ends up with 253. We saw a nice bat down by Snead and interception. Charvarius Ward goes down with that fractured hand. Although, you know what? Guys do play with clubs on their hand, so we'll see if he it don't really amount for the Chargers game. We'll see what his effect is. But the bottom line, you've got guys to come in like Rashad Fenton that really looks like a great pick at this point. As far as Snead, people didn't know how good Charvarius Ward would be when they made that trade with Dallas for Parker Anger, and he's been much better than we thought. Of course, the Honey Badger back there is kind of the quarterback of the secondary, and Dirty Dan thumping people out there. Just your overall thoughts on the secondary.
I thought it was good. I thought it was good for the number of young bodies that they had to get out there. Kendrick Thompson had to fill in for Juan Thornhill for three or four long drives there. So he actually looked like he got a ton of snaps, but they were kind of rotating him in a little bit. But yeah, the story of all of this is L'Jarius Snead. L'Jarius Snead, we talk about athleticism at the cornerback position a lot, especially doing the draft guide. I've got my, a little formula that I've come up with to try and grade cornerback athleticism. And it just proves out time and time again, because you see that rep against Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks had a face, a handful of face masks there at the line of scrimmage when Snead was pressing. His feet were a little bit wrong, but he was able to flip his hips, turn, run with the ball, locate it, and swat it down. That's what that top-level athleticism does for you. And it seems like the Chiefs, with Bo Pete Keys, with L'Jarius Snead, even Antonio Hamilton, a guy with that kind of speed and fluidity, They're moving towards that methodology of defending the pass. And so it's really nice to see those guys get the early reps. Yeah, it was shaky at times. Antonio Hamilton and Rashad Fenton had a big mix-up resulting in a major downfield pass late in the game there that made Deshaun Watson's stats look a lot better. But it's a situation where they're going to grow into the game, give these young guys some time to play. Charverius Ward still looks good, but they need to hold them out. I feel pretty confident that you can get these guys on the field with Tyrann Mathieu, with Dan Sorensen, Juan Thornhill, these guys that are smart players are going to keep everything organized, and you're going to see the team is going to be better in January and then in 2021, 2022, when they can rely on some of these younger athletes to kind of step in and take on a bigger role like we saw Snead do in week one.
Craig, final thing for you. Ask Matt Lane the same thing. Chargers at the Bengals, Raiders at the Panthers, Titans at the Broncos tomorrow night. Does the AFC West just have one winning team this week, the Chiefs, or do you see other W's in that group?
I think the Panthers are going to get off a little bit shaky, but I would agree. I think the other two AFC West teams there are going to lose, but I do have the Raiders eking out the Panthers there.
Okay. All right. Craig Stout at Barley Hop on Twitter, part of Arrowhead Pride. Thanks a million, Craig. Great to be back with you.
Great to be on, Bing. Thanks for having me.
Take care right there, Craig Stout. I'm interested. I want to see what the AFC West does. I'm real curious about this. Talk to Trez Paylor about it tomorrow on the Trez Paylor Show. 7, following Chiefs Kingdom with Mitch Holtis. And then the Ray Reaction Show with Dusty Likens coming up after that. So it's going to be a fun-filled football night tomorrow night, as every day is here on 610 Sports Radio. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the NFL slate today, and we'll start looking at who's going to be a contender and who's a pretender.
Big Sunday.
Man, NFL Red Zone should have you fired up today. Listen to the Royals on the radio. Hear the great Denny Matthews. Watch some NFL Red Zone. Seahawks and Falcons get things kicked off at noon. And again, according to Ian Rappaport, no positive test for COVID across the NFL. They've done a great job. They really have. I mean, you think about some of these colleges and, you know, canceling games. I mean, every day there's something canceled. Virginia Tech's canceled next week. Oklahoma State had to cancel. Baylor doesn't even have an opening opponent until they just got Houston, because Houston had to cancel their game with Memphis, who's already played because COVID. But regardless, you need a roadmap in college football at some points. But so far, the NFL, they've done a great job, to be honest with you, on limiting these things. Jets at the Bills. I'm looking forward to see if the Bills will be in that second tier. I believe in the Bills this year. I love some of their offseason additions. I like their coaching staff. I actually like the quarterback situation in a team that I think can win the AFC East this year. Who's also, they were the big survivor pick this week. I picked the Bills, and a lot of other people went Buffalo Bills as well in that one. Home game, but again, home games are different. Although I will say teams traveling presents different, but of course the proximity between the Jets and Bills, it's not even really like much of a road game. The Bears at the Lions, see old Mitch Trubisky if he actually has something. They have buyer's remorse. They could have had Alvin Kamara too. Had they just not made trades on draft day, they could have had Kamara and Patrick Mahomes, but that's Chicago Bears problems. Packers at Vikings at noon. Look, the Vikings are a team a lot of people have a lot of high hopes in. I know Mike Zimmer is out there testing the mask before the game. Can you read the plays or not? I remember Andy Reid had the fogged up shield on Thursday night, which I think he should use that scuba gear that they have, the scuba mask. There used to be a guy that did K-State radio. He's a scuba diver now. I think he'd probably – I'm serious. I know Andy Reid. Remember the mask was fogging up? I mean, it could be a problem if you wear glasses, you know, and the fogging situation. But that scuba stuff you put inside the mask, doesn't that keep you pretty clean when you're scuba diving?
I have never been scuba diving.
I haven't either. Just seen it on TV, Shark Week, you know. See those guys – but they're not fogging up. I mean, there's great whites out there, and they're in those little cages out there. They're not fogging up.
They're also under the ocean. It might be.
But still, though, if you're under the ocean and you're not fogging up, it means you're putting that scuba clear on your deal. I mean, I think somebody needs to get Andy Reid, either that or just change mask or something. But, you know, something to keep it or develop windshield wipers for it. One of the two. Eagles at the Washington – or Dolphins at the Patriots, excuse me, at noon. Curious to see what Cam Newton – wearing a nice yellow suit. Looks like Dick Tracy walking into the stadium today. Be curious with the Patriots if we can put him out to pasture. I do believe the Chiefs kind of kept the Patriots alive, so to speak, when D Ford was offsides. I think the Patriots would have had dirt put over them had the Chiefs ended up winning that game. Eagles at the Washington football team at noon. That's still weird to say. Raiders at the Panthers, and Joe Brady's the offensive coordinator in Carolina, and he was with LSU last year in that offense. I'm going to see if they'll have something for Las Vegas. I believe they do. We'll see Colts-Jags, then at noon, Browns-Ravens. This afternoon, Chargers and Bengals, definitely interested in that. Buccaneers-Saints, probably my favorite game of the afternoon. Cardinals and 49ers, and then tonight's game, Cowboys and Rams, and then tomorrow you have Steelers-Giants, Titans-Broncos. Again, the Broncos gives you a chance. You're going to sit there and watch the AFC West in primetime. There's a little late start. Well, if you got used to watching KU against the Chanticleers last night at 9 o'clock, you can stay up for Titans and Broncos. Let's head the phone lines real quick before we take our final timeout and go to Lone Jack and talk to our good friend, Neil. What's up, Neil?
Morning, Jay. How are you, sir?
Good.
It's good to have you on the radio, man. I hope you're feeling well.
Yeah, I feel great.
I understand that was part of your hiatus anyway.
What's on your mind?
Just glad to have you back, and having you back on the radio talking football on Sunday morning just makes it feel a little bit more normal. And looking forward to a nice lazy day of watching football. Looking forward to the Pats Fins here in a few minutes. And as far as the game the other night, I'll just say that my two favorite things and takeaways have to be L'Jarius Sneed, and then I thought Patrick summed it up perfectly with his tweet the next day. I saw he just said, "Nice start, good start," and I mean that's a perfect way of summing it up. I think it's a great first game. Hashtag running back is full in effect, and I think he said it just clear and concisely that it's time to. It was a good win, great first win. Put it behind us and move on to the Chargers and get ready for them and kick their ass too.
Great call, Neil. I love that. Yes, hopefully the Chiefs will go out and kick some ass in Los Angeles in front of no fans. I'm looking forward to that game. But it's good to have football back. I mean, it's why we love this stuff. By the way, speaking of Andy Reid's face mask,
that was brutal. Yeah, I didn't do very good with that thing. But it'll be better the next time. So I appreciate you asking that, though. It was a bit of a mess, but we'll get it fixed up.
If anybody will fix something, it'll be Andy Reid. He's so meticulous and good at what he does. That won't be a problem anymore. Text line says 913-576-7610. Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beer. Text line, scuba stuff works from the 913. The 785 says get Coach some Rain-X. That might work too. I don't know, but I'm just saying, with all this technology that's out there that people are putting on different stuff, make something for the coaches, man. Get like a little battery-operated, wiper that goes across it, something like that. I'd put the scuba stuff on. I would do that. I'm serious though, Grant. I mean, we're coming up with all these fancy stuff, man. Everybody's got this fancy stuff. I even ordered one of those New Era Chiefs masks, which is something I never thought I'd have in my life. Obviously, 2020 has proved this different. Ordered one for my mom and I, and we still haven't got them because so many people in Kansas City order them. I was ready to rock. But I do not have that fancy face shield like Andy Reid.
Would you want a face shield? I would not be. I'm not pro face shield.
I don't know. I don't like wearing jewelry or anything. I don't even wear watches. If you gave me an Apple Watch, I wouldn't wear it. I mean, I don't like fancy stuff. I don't like jewelry. I don't like wearing anything. So I would probably say no. I don't like wearing anything, but obviously you have to at times. But, I mean, if I was a head coach, I'd rather wear that than a mask. I mean, I'd scuba gear that thing up and develop some wipers for it. I mean, I'd try to be ahead of the curve on it,
At this point, I've done the mask thing, though. I'm comfortable with the mask thing. I haven't done the face shield.
That's fine, but I have trouble with the fogging up issues and actually breathing in it. Yeah, and I sweat a lot. I sweat profusely. I'm kind of an overweight gentleman, and we sweat a lot, and those can be kind of a problem. But I digress. Coming up next, we're getting close to Josh Vernier coming up at noon for the Kansas City Royals, going for 6 in a row. We come back, though, the week that was in Kansas City, pretty darn good. We'll discuss that in the NFL next.
Bink Sunday.
Final segment, Bink Sunday from the 913. Bink got my home cereal. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. That was a tasty cereal. And I remember when it came out at Hy-Vee, we all rushed down there and got it. I remember coming back with the box for, I think I got Pete Sweeney a box of it too, because I went and I was able to get a few boxes. I bought one, just kept it, didn't eat it. Of course, the other ones I kind of went through because I actually, hey, what's up, Dustman? Hey, Dustman, how you doing? Dusty Likens, you can hear him tomorrow night following Trez Paylor and I on the Trez Paylor Show, following Mitch Holthus in the Chiefs Kingdom Show. Don't forget tomorrow on 610 Sports Radio, 7:30, Derek Johnson, one of my all-time favorite Chiefs. The guy was just a self-made, you know, Todd Haley's doghouse to being one of the best linebackers we've ever seen, Chiefs all-time leading tackler. 8:30, the color commentator for the Kansas City Chiefs, Dana Hughes, will join the sideline reporter, Josh Klingler, and Fesco on Fesco in the Morning, Bill Moss. At 11 o'clock, I'll be in with Alex Gold during that show. And, of course, any Chiefs pressers got you covered in 215, the exclusive interview with The Drive each week with number 15. Speaking of cereal, Patrick Mahomes. I actually like the cereal. I figured everything he does, he like puts his, you know, kind of time into it. But I actually like the Mahomes cereal. And I wish they'd come back out with it. I haven't seen it. I know they brought it back for a while. But I would be good with the Mahomes cereal. So you stop laughing, Grant. Here's the thing. Because, and this is a little side subject, but look at all the athletes around the country or former coaches that have these fancy schmancy steakhouses. You know, like Shula Steakhouse or Ditka's in Chicago. It's real fancy stuff. But nobody has like a fast food restaurant. You know, Mahomes is big in Whataburger, and everybody likes the fact that because of Patrick, we're getting the Whataburger here in town, which is fantastic burgers, by the way. I don't know if you've been there. I actually prefer it more than In-N-Out, so I'm okay with that. But just have a place called Mahomes, Mahomes Land, whatever you want. And have Andy Reid design his own burger, put it on the menu. And then Patrick could actually sign his own autographs because they've got to be tough to get. He could just sign every 500 people or 1,000 people goes in, gets a free Mahomes autograph. You telling me that place wouldn't be full? People were waiting 2.5 to 3 hours for a Chiefs flag at McDonald's. Are you telling me they wouldn't wait for an Andy Reid burger? Are you telling me they wouldn't wait for a Mahomes burger or a Kelce burger?
Binkley, they have a Travis Scott meal. Like, that's the saddest thing in the world.
So, wait, are you telling me, Dusty,
would you order
off
the Travis Kelce? What would be the Travis Kelce? I'd be like, it'd be like a spicy double quarter pounder with a Sprite and like seasoned fries.
I would definitely go two patties, probably some pepper jack, maybe throw in a few jalapenos.
I don't know if he's a jalapeno guy. I think he's spicy, but I don't know if he's like that spicy. I think he's like more. I think he's more of a banana pepper guy. Sweet heat.
How about the Clyde Edwards-Hilaire burger? Little, because
that one that hits you before you know it.
And I've been. I don't know if this is a nickname or not, Dusty. You know I love nicknames.
Yeah,
everybody's got one. You're the Dust Man, Dirty. Everybody's got a nickname except for Grant. I had to work on that.
What's your nickname?
Just and fat guy.
No, come on.
But seriously.
Yeah.
Louisiana hot sauce. Like, I haven't heard people. Like, let me think about it, man. He's back there. He's from the state of Louisiana. Played at LSU. It's Clyde the Glide. Clyde Glide, I've seen. You know, obviously, his Twitter handle has the Glide. But Louisiana hot sauce.
Have you familiar with the singer Sammy Kershaw?
Mm-hmm.
Cadillac style. He sings a song called Louisiana Hot Sauce.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Check it out after this.
A little sprinkle of Louisiana hot sauce on the Texans here.
Mad dash.
But I think the Mahomes burger would do well, though. I'll be honest with you. I know you'd go by after your shift today. And you'd probably get it before Red Reaction tomorrow. Which, by the way, since you're here, let's preview that. It's a new show to 610 where if you're listening now and you're chiming in on the text line, which a lot of you are doing, you can call your Chiefs thoughts. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of times – A lot of content going on, not a lot of time for phone calls. Not with Dusty. Tomorrow night, Red Reaction is about the fans.
Yeah, and so like when you and Therese do your thing, I know there's going to be a lot of people being like, hey, Therese, hey, Bink, what about this? You can still ask those guys that. They're still going to answer that and talk about that from 7 to 8. But then after that, you can just let your voice be heard. I'll talk to you. I'll listen to you. Literally, the phone lines are theirs. Like, I'm just sitting in that chair tomorrow night reacting to what they have to say. We'll have a couple segments that'll have you intrigued and entertained. So something different, Bink. I think it'll be fun.
It's a good primer for the Broncos coming on after that. But it's going to be full go all day. I've already mentioned all the great guests tomorrow. But it's Mitch Holthus, Chiefs Kingdom. Therese Paylor and I, then the Dust Man, the Dirty Werewolf himself, and you Chiefs fans talking about Red Reaction from the 785, talking about Whataburger. And people like this because I'm not kidding you. Some of these places are expensive. And that's why a lot of people don't go back. You know, I mean, they'll go once because, hey, I want a Shula's glass to have, you know, the steakhouse glass to be cool or go to Ditka's. How about a fast food restaurant that everybody can afford? This just makes too much sense to me why you wouldn't do this. And you have the power to sign autographs and have people wait in line for it. I just think it would be brilliant, especially if you go order an Andy Reid burger. That would be perfect. But bad day for the Big 12. If you weren't listening when we opened the show, Arkansas State, 20 players out, 8 starters. They get the win in Manhattan. Sun Belt wins in Ames, Iowa over Iowa State with Louisiana Lafayette. And the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina come into Lawrence. For 2 straight years, that game was supposed to be in Conway, South Carolina. They agreed to come play Kansas in Lawrence, and they get the win as the Sun Belt 3-0 against the Big 12 in week 1. That's the non-conference game. Everybody had to schedule one. Get that out of the way. It's Big 12 season now, and I can't wait. Of course, they haven't done it yet, but I always want them to expand college football playoffs this year. I mean, they're making their own rules as they go along anyway. You're canceling games, scheduling, moving them around. Make the playoffs 8 or 16 teams, because we're not seeing, like, we're not seeing Ohio State and Oregon, which, by the way, the Big Ten voting today whether they're going to play or not. But we're missing these big-time games. You know, let's do it as far as the playoffs are concerned. You know, recoup some of that money. Ohio State's losing like $50 million, some of these athletic departments. Get some TV money. Let's get an expanded postseason, you know? Get that money. Recoup it. Play that card.
They might have to. They might have to next year.
Play that card if you're college football, man. Let's get expanded playoffs. We won the playoffs in the beginning, but this year would be the perfect year to expand those playoffs. I digress. Thursday night, all college football on Rush to Field starting at 8 o'clock. Huge thanks to Grant Nicholson producing the operation. Don't forget Josh Vernier comes your way next with the Dirty Werewolf for the Kansas City Royals. Grant, it's good to see you. It's been a minute, as we've said. Great to be back. Look forward to Sunday mornings with everybody, 10 to noon, following Steven Sirdin, Fantasy Football Sunday. See you guys later.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.